Jesus once quipped that a prophet is not welcome in his own hometown. Ever the rebel, Father John Thomas Lane has enjoyed testing that proverb now for over 15 years as pastor of St. Paschal Babylon Parish in Highland Heights, Ohio, the parish that he grew up in as a child, with family members still nearby. Moreover, Father Lane now serves as the provincial superior of the U.S. province of the Congregation of the Blessed Sacrament, a religious community he's known since childhood. This congregation, founded by St. Peter Julian Aimard, has a commitment to respond to the hungers of the human family with the riches of God's love manifested in the Eucharist. The day that I reached him in fall 2022, he was in the process of manifesting God's love by signing 2,000 walkathon thank you letters for the parish school. We had a frank, funny conversation about parish life in the modern U.S., with all its multiple opportunities for miscommunication and misinterpretation whenever power is involved. And of course, it's always involved.
Can you remember a time when maybe in your new position, it's really quite recent? I tend to think of myself as still, even in ministry at the age of 53, I'm like, I'm the young David in the room. I'm the one who's like fighting for justice and helping to turn over evil. And then all of a sudden, one time I had this experience with a student where I realized that in their imagination, I was not young David at all. I was actually like Goliath. And I kind of woke up to the fact that at least in other people's stories, I'm a person with a lot of power. So I'd be curious to know if there was a moment kind of like that for you.
There's been a couple over the years. Every time I become a new pastor, this is my third pastorate. So I've been a 23 years a pastor. And it always comes up in every site. And every now and then, it's like a boomerang that comes back every now and then, like once or twice a year now, because I've been here 13 and a half years. But, oh, Father Lane's going to yell at us if we don't, blah, 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 blah. So I started saying, have I ever yelled? And they said, no, they just think you do, because you've got all the power. And I thought, I never thought of people in leadership yelling. But then, you know, you see like some like of our previous presidents, you hear their stories about how they were in office or, you know, elected officials or different people who have been yellers. But it's a way for people to put like a barrier between you, because they don't, it's one of the things that's, for me, it's like there's no sense of open communication or feeling like, oh, I don't want to bother him because he's so important. He's got so many things he's doing. And so they'll use those type of key phrases to me, yelling, I don't want to bother, you're busy, you're too busy for me, as symbols of power. When I'm just an average guy, for the longest time, I've always been the young kid. I've been the one stirring the thing up. I'm the one like doing this. And now I realize I'm not the young one anymore. And there's not necessarily people behind me following either, wanting to join or volunteer or do these things. And I always feel that way too. Usually it has been, until most recently, I was always like the youngest pastor when I went to pastor training in Houston, or I was the youngest, maybe I'm the youngest provincial, I don't know now. Wherever committee I served on, like I was on a National Liturgy Board, I was on a Southwest Liturgical Conference Board, I was always the youngest. And it drove people crazy. Because they would treat me like, oh, you're just a kid. And they would say that stuff. And I hear that less and less, but I still do hear it from people in the parish here because I grew up here. And some people will always see me as the child and not having the power, even though they do weird dynamics around that. Oh, he's too busy for us, or he's whatever.
Oh, that's fascinating. I mean, I do wonder if in ministry, we get to play the child for a longer period of time because the next generation's not there in ministry.
Like, for sure.
My husband's in healthcare and they keep having gatherings of the young mission leaders. And it was everybody under 40. And then it was everybody under 50. And now it's like everybody under 55 gets to come to the youth thing.
Yeah.
And that was else in the world are perceived that way.
That was a big thing in our order with leadership and not allowing the next generation.
The other thing that you're saying there that's really interesting to me is I think that even though you're speaking with the same tone of voice, for whatever reason, people hear it as a yell. Like the way that it echoes inside of their own head is that it comes across with a strength that other people's words might not come across.
I've also, you know, through the years have had many seminars or leadership things that have come my way, or just great models of people who have showed me the best way to lead and to serve. And not everyone wants to even bother to learn that, but the people have purposely said to me, I'm so grateful that you do this or whatever. For instance, I do rounds, I call them. I don't summon people to my office. I think that's a big thing that really does initially will get people, like even I had to call our advancement director for the order this morning. And I'm normally off on Fridays. So he was like, hello, Father Lane, is everything okay? And I said, oh yeah, I just called to ask you a question about Christmas. I'm doing Christmas planning right now. And he said, oh God, thank God. I thought it'd be bad news because you've never called me on a Friday, but no provincial's ever even called me. So, but I go to their office, I go around the building, I walk the campus to see people. And that was something that when I first became a priest, I had two things happen that were instrumental. My immediate supervisor was that type of person who told me why he did what he did. He said, it intimidates some people because they think I'm spying on them. But the other thing is far worse when you summon people. And then the other was for ordination gift. My dear friends from went to college with gave me Franklin Covey, the day planner. So, and they have the little quips every day and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd read those and they're just, you know, they're inspiring, they're thoughtful and make you want to be that type of a person. Mm-hmm. But also the bigger thing for me growing up, just to always try to be Christ to other people. And what would Jesus do? Even before that phrase became a thing, I was always thinking that because we had my second grade teacher, Sister Monica, before First Communion. You have this responsibility, and now that you're going to be receiving Jesus, you are going to be showing Jesus to other people, and all you do, he's always going to be part of your soul now. You have to act as if Jesus were doing, and Jesus is in you, and you have to show Jesus to other people. So that was really, you know, a second grader. I took it to heart, of course, being an anal retentive OCD, well, it's really CDO, ADHD type of guy. Bottom line, those things kind of influenced me.
Wow, that's something that you would remember that from your first communion, even when you were in second grade. Mm-hmm. And that now you're in a community that is centered its life around Eucharist. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So when you hear me say the word power, what do you hear in your mind?
I initially do hear negativity and like a standoffishness.
Yeah.
Because of, for some reason, just the negativity, because of how it's been used against me in my own life at different times that were key formative times in my life. When you've had someone throw their title of against you, such as, I'm the provincial, you have to do this, or I can fail you out of school if you don't do this and stuff like that.
And if you hear me say the word influence, does that strike your ear differently?
Yes.
How so?
Someone with influence will work with you, will tell you certain things or maybe get some sort of feedback from you. There'll be a sense that you can perhaps cooperate and share in a decision-making process together. Okay. They may say, I think this might be good for you if you did this in your life. They're not saying, you have to go and do this, you know, which is can be more authoritative or power-stricken.
The reason why I've asked that is because when I've been talking with different people, it's been interesting. People of our generation, if I say the word power, the most common response is, yeah, it's corrupt or it's abusive. And if I say the word influence, most of us are kind of okay with that.
Yeah.
I could kind of see myself as a person of influence. I like to think of myself as shaping or forming the world around me. It's been interesting to me, though, the next generation, when I ask them question, what do you think about being a person of influence? And they're like, oh, no. Influence means manipulation. Influence means shallow. Influence means without substance. And I would say, what about being a person of power? And they're like, well, yeah, that would work. Like that doesn't have negative. I mean, so it's been interesting. I've wondered whether or not there's something particular that happened with our generation that made us think about power in negative ways.
Perhaps so. That's very interesting.
So what do you do to try to stay in a healthy zone? Like, are there scripture passages that guide you?
I mean, I do draw on the scripture passage that grabbed me early on in my life. I think because also taking my religious vows on August 15th, the Magnificat has always been a go-to scripture.
Even in the position that you're in right now and the number of years that you've been in leadership roles, is there something that you wish you were able to do that you can't do? Like there's something like, if I had this tool in my box, I think I'd be a better leader. I'd exercise power better.
No, I just wish I had like another hour or two a day so that I could spend more time reading, studying, reflecting, because you just never feel like there's never enough time to pray. There's never enough time to visit with people or spend the quality time sometimes you need to do in building relationships.
Are there times when, are there situations where even as pastor or provincial, you still feel powerless? And what do you say to yourself in those situations?
It's an interesting question. I don't know if I've ever felt powerless, because I do think in a situation, even when it's been a challenging one, like I always think of the creative blessing that's going to come out of it and what can be done to make this better for me or for the other person. But that's my personality, I suppose.
Underneath a lot of what you've been talking about, I think I hear blessed, something having to do with sacramentality of Eucharist obviously means a great deal to you. Mm. Or it's underneath, it's a charism thing. Uh-huh. How has the spirituality of the congregation that you've given your life to shaped the way that you think through some of these things?
Some of the mottos and the phrases are the things that we learn and grow up with our founder. Even before, I mean, I grew up in this parish, so I was hearing them preached, or I was reading our rule of life here in the pew. And before I was 11 or 12 years old, I see this new rule of life in the pew and reading it. I was like, wow, I really like this. But the big thing about for me was like, ever since the age of six, I felt that call to serve God as an ordained minister. I didn't want to be. I didn't think I was holy enough or good enough because of the voices that were around me at that time. My parents founded the liturgy commission at both the first parish we were at, and then when we moved up here when I was eight. So it's always been a part of my foundation or structure to think liturgically, to think Eucharistically. And so with our founder and his structure of prayer, which is called the four ends, you know, seeing everything through adoration to God, asking for forgiveness for God, thanking God, and then petitioning God, those four ends of every 15 minutes of your hour of prayer being devoted to that, or just being a quick examine of conscience before you go to bed, was a way that shaped me, you know, and has shaped my life.
Yeah. And do you think of it in any connection with power, like your exercise of power? How has it changed the way that you exercise?
Well, it goes back to the way Jesus would handle the questions of the scribes and the Pharisees. He would, in a sense, not answer their question, but ask a different question to be able to get them around an issue in a different way. Huh. And that modeling shaped me too. So I'm always being proactive. And that's one thing with staff I've taught them over the years. Don't wait for the problem. Be proactive about it. Get out in front of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And also help people see and realize you're being a leader here. You're being on top of things.
And it reflects also in the way that I'll go out and look for the people in their offices rather than having them come to me. Right. You're the one who will do the searching.
Right.
And initiating.
And, you know, you just gave me an insight for a future homily there, because I've been talking about Christ so much. I usually pretty private about my faith, but I think that's what that parable about going out after the lost sheep is about, or going for the one.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, anngarrido.com. But let me also nudge you in the direction of Father John Thomas's congregational website for more information on his community's history and charism. See blessedsacrament.com. Meanwhile, know that I'm praying for you as this week you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in the world.